Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Oh, so I was telling you about Phoenix. This is Phoenix right here. And a song called J-Boy. They are from Versailles, and they're at the pageant tonight. The dude, the lead singer dude, the guy who formed the band, I can't remember his name, but he's married to Sofia Coppola.
Jacques? Oh, I don't know. I'm making up French
Jacques
names.
Really? They're a really good band, though, and I'm looking forward to the show tonight at the pageant. So a couple things before Sue's news. I have to admit parental failure on trying to teach my daughter to ride a bike. Now, mind you, just to give you the update here, about 3 weeks ago, I took her, because I was frustrated. I was trying to get this done. She doesn't listen to me. So my friend Eduardo said, here's a contact name of, and Bobby was the guy's name from bike school. Like,
yeah.
This is what he does.
You said he was
on
great.
The side. He's a teacher. He was awesome.
Yeah.
And in 1 hour, he had her up and riding this bike. I met him at Francis Park a few weeks ago. But then we're trying to, you know, get her to have confidence, and she can ride the bike, but she doesn't want to use the brakes. And there's a handbrake, and there's a, you know, your feet brake. But
I was going to say, does she have the foot brake too, or just the handbrake? Or can
both.
You do both? That's nice.
It is, but she just seems unwilling to do the brakes.
Well, she's so scared.
She is. Yeah.
That's what
it is. She, did I tell you when she fell a week ago?
Oh,
or
no.
Like 2 weeks ago, she fell. And, you know, Bobby and I have been telling her the whole time, have you fallen yet? No. Have you fallen? So then she falls on my watch, and it was like, I hate you. I'm like, well, that's a little harsh, right? But she's going to go back to bike school on Sunday morning. Sue, I want her to ride a bike so
desperately. I know. It's going to change your entire life.
I know.
And
so
hers.
I'm going to give you the update. You're gone tomorrow.
Yeah.
So
I'm going.
I heard a rumor that
how about old Fred Button?
Fred is doing Sue's news.
Oh, my goodness.
I've already started working on it,
Have
Sue.
You? Have yep. you? Fred, I can't wait.
Well, here's why I believe him.
Wait, I'm not going to hear it, but I'll tune it in.
I went to another studio
Odyssey.com.
today, and I noticed a bunch of audio that was in for Sue's news. I'm like, wow, Sue's doing a lot of audio today, but now it seems like Fred's doing a lot of audio.
That's hilarious.
I am.
That'll
I don't
be
have
good.
Any.
That'll be great, though.
I am going to Chicago to watch my niece Sophie, who's at Northwestern, play.
Oh, that's awesome.
In her senior year, they're undefeated again.
She's the national champion.
Yeah, well, yeah, her team.
Well, right, but I mean, she won. She was on a team with a national championship.
Yeah.
I think that qualifies as being a national champion.
Okay, you're right. I'm so sorry.
I'm going to give her that.
I don't want to take it away from her. So I'm going to see two games, but when I drive there, Fred, I can always go to the Odyssey app, can't I, Abby?
Oh,
yes,
my goodness.
The Odyssey app.
Yes.
You can rewind up to 24 hours and stream
it live.
You
know, you really don't need to do that.
I'm going
to
do it.
I can send it to you when we're done.
I've got the Odyssey app. I'm going to download Sue's news because she pulls that out for a podcast.
Hey, I have to tell you one story here. Fred, I don't think I told you this. Was I telling you this story earlier, just Tricia? So my old radio station, WTMJ, I worked for them for just shy of 10 years. That's where I met my wife, Rebecca, who's from Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. Legendary station up there, not unlike KMOX, my other former station. There is WTMJ, WTMJ TV also, and then TMJ is the Milwaukee Journal. So it was the journal, the paper. The journal became the Journal Sentinel.
Okay.
So it was a big, you know, history. Think about history, even in this market with KMOX, or you can use Keishi as an example, too, because there's so much history there, right? So I go up there in 1997 when I started doing the morning show and had a great run, really loved the people, still keep in contact with them. It was way too cold in Wisconsin. But they were housed in this place called Radio City, which is this building that has been around for, I think, maybe almost 100 years, and the station was in there. But because of all the ownership changes, they're moving. You know, the studios are moving into another building. These things happen. Look, Fred, you and I, well, hell, you were down on Memorial Drive for how long? 30 years, right?
Yeah, 30 years.
And we've been here for almost 10 in this building. But so the news director up there, Eric Bilstead, who's a guy... Thank you, Siri. Sorry. A guy that I worked with reaches out today and he goes, hey, because they're about to move and they're doing these little vignettes and say, hey, do you have any memories of Radio City?
Oh, I gotcha.
So my one memory, honestly, but I have to tell you the funny story about this. And maybe I should have shared this. I don't know if it would have aired. When I was doing an afternoon drive show, filling in for the host at one point, there was a guy that I worked with who had never had a lobster. In his life.
He never had a lobster.
Yeah. So I was horrified by that. His name was Phil Cianciolo.
Wait a minute. Fred, have you had a lobster?
I did.
Okay. You just look suspicious to me.
I'm thinking of a similar story.
Abby doesn't like seafood.
I don't like seafood, but I don't think I've had lobster in like 15 years.
Just quickly, though. The big elaborate thing, I get this chef, I don't know, it was a restaurant. They come in, they're boiling in this TV studio that wasn't being used. They got big vats of water. Oh. I was going to surprise him on the air with a lobster. He'd never had a lobster,
right? Oh, great idea.
So I'm doing some fun radio. And then next to me, there's this little thing that, as I remember it, we kind of called it the Blinky Blinky. And we had a traffic guy. Ironically, his name was Tom Carr. That was his real name, C-A-R-R.
Wow.
And he flew, you used to do that too. And if he would have to contact the host to tell them that something was happening, he would hit that little light. It was the blinky-blinky.
Yeah.
So I see this thing. I'm about to do this lobster thing, and I see this thing going off, and I go right to him. And I don't think a lot of people around here will remember this, but you might. But when they were building Miller Park, there was this huge crane that was called Big Blue, and it just collapsed. And there were construction workers that were killed, and it was this. So it changed the whole dynamic of that day. Here we are just doing something kind of fun, and then we had to shift into coverage that lasted all night and into the morning. It was a major story. And to this day, he's never had a lobster.
What'd you do with all the lobster that was... Did you take
it home? I took it home and ate it. But the other thing that was funny, just quickly, but this is the story.
That's why I asked that.
It was really a dumb question. It did not get wasted. But there was this, I've never told anyone about this until today. I told Tricia because I remembered. So they had this, it was a huge building, and they had this upstairs area that actually had a little gym. And when I was doing evenings, I did an evening talk show. So it was on 8 to midnight, the Brewers games were on, or Monday Night Football. So I'd go up there, you'll laugh at this, I'd lift weights up there. I really would. There were mirrors, I'd lift weights, I'd listen to the radio. And there was this room in that room, like a little closet off that room. So one night I'm up there. And what's this? And I open up the closet, right? And I go in there, and there's like files and stuff. It was a situation where somebody should have locked the door, right? I may or may not have been privy to the salaries of everyone that I worked with at the time, including the TVs. I mean, I had to take a little bit of a peek, right?
Well, I'm not sure you did.
I did. I'm just confessing that I did take a peek. It's so funny because I never told anyone that until this day, until I told Tricia out there. But that's not the story that I shared with them, but maybe I should have. Then people up there would want to know what I knew, right? They want me to share the information. Anyway, let's do this.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Couldn't you have given the guy a lobster to take home?
He didn't want it.
This is bothering me.
Oh, no. Do you think I didn't try?
What did he say? No.
Yeah, he just didn't want. I told him, I said, fill your lobster. It was awesome because they prepared like an entire dinner. It sat there. I was on the air that night until about 11 o'clock, and it sat there because no one was eating it. But I did. I remember getting home after that show, and I think I had a great lobster dinner right around midnight.
Aren't lobsters
so
hard to eat?
No. They're delicious to eat.
I would have thought Jinx. So too, Fred. Crabs are hard to eat, though, right?
Crabs are hard to eat, I think.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, lobster, not
a lot of work.
So bad.
Not as much work with a lobster.
Yeah, those claws are a little bit bigger. We wax philosophic. In Sue's News today, we have a story from 47 years ago. Now, I was a kid, Mark was a kid, and Fred was a kid. Abby was not alive, but I'm telling you that I don't remember this. In 1975, Sarah Jane Moore, do you know that name, Fred?
Is she tried to kill somebody?
That's right.
President?
She failed in her attempt to assassinate President Gerald Ford.
Well,
did you remember
Fromm.
That? No. This was less than 3 weeks after Squeaky Fromm tried to do
it. Okay, because I do remember
that
name.
There were two attempts.
All right, that's a little foggy.
Yeah, so Sarah Jane Moore failed in her attempt 47 years ago today to assassinate President Ford, who could, by all accounts, was... I mean, totally harmless. I of all people to try to take out.
Well, he tripped over a lot of things, but outside of that.
Yes. Okay, so she did it less than 3 weeks after a member of the Manson family tried to take him out. That was Squeaky Fromm. Moore got sentenced to life in prison, but they let her out on parole in 2007. Fromm and Moore are the only two women to have attempted to assassinate an American president.
I think maybe the reason we don't remember her name, and I do vaguely remember the name, so I couldn't have placed it, but because Squeaky Fromm's name is so unique and because there was so much attention on that, that might be, it just got overshadowed.
Well, the fact that they were 3 weeks apart and they both tried in California.
That's interesting.
Isn't that bizarre?
Can you imagine what the president was thinking? Like,
what
come
in
on.
The world, right?
Back-to-back attempts?
Come on. By the way, fall, I think we all know this, officially arrives today at 8.04 p.m. I have my fall purse. You understand?
Oh, I do see that.
I switched to the fall purse.
Nice there.
Thank you.
What's the difference?
Well, I can't have a light color, Fred, in the fall. Oh. You know, I had that light green. We have to move. You understand.
Now
it's
I
a
do.
Dark color. Abby, do you feel me on that?
I understand, yes.
Thank you.
Believe it or not, I understand, too. Even though I can't believe I admitted that, but I do understand. I really do.
Now, I've got some facts for you about the changing season. Okay, the first day of fall, of course, is the autumnal equinox. Do you know what equinox means, Fred Bottenheimer?
I do not.
Abby, anybody?
Something about the moon?
No, but that's a good guess.
Something about the sun.
It means equal night. No, I'm sorry, I only have a this. I don't have the buzzer. You got to buzz yourself. Thank you. It means equal night.
Oh, I see.
But we don't really get exactly 12 hours of daytime today, more like 12 hours, 10 minutes. There is a day when it happens, and that's the equinox. And for most of the U.S., it's next Monday or Tuesday. Mm-hmm. The word fall comes from an old saying, the fall of leaves. A poet in England used to say it in the 1600s, and it caught on. Americans kept saying it and shortened it to fall, but most British people, of course, say autumn. Snooties.
Yeah, they also say Cuber, as I always have to point
out. Cuber? What's Cuba?
Cuba.
A country.
They put an R in Cuba and lieutenant. I don't follow.
Lieutenant?
They say lieutenant.
What is that? Yeah.
They add an F to lieutenant.
Oh, I don't like that.
I love my British peeps, but they talk funny. What
yeah,
can I say?
It's true.
But then again, it's in fairness, they would say we say farty around here, right?
That's
farty,
true.
Highway farty far.
Morgan fired. That's my best one. And how many leaves fall every year? It's impossible to know, but somebody ballparked it anyway. 200 billion trees in the U.S., 200,000 leaves each, 40 quadrillion leaves. That's probably way off, though, but that is the best guess on how many leaves fall.
That would be fun to jump into.
Wouldn't that be? In a story for Mark, Americans have been listening to music this year. Music revenue is up 9%. We already learned about the sales of vinyl records up 22%. We talked about that. Paid streaming music services are up 10%, with revenue around $6.5 million. 90 million people have streaming services now. And streaming represents 84% of total music revenue.
They don't pay me to say this. They never have, but I love Tidal, T-I-D-A-L. It's a great music service. A lot of people are not familiar with them. The format is very easy to use. If you want to check it out, I think they have a free subscription.
Is it like Spotify?
Yeah. You know, but I love the format. It's just an easier format to me than Apple Music or Spotify. So, and it's, I think it's competitively priced. The other thing for Tidal is unique because it does have a category for people who consider themselves more audiophiles because there's a master quality audio, but you don't have to have that. You pay more for that. You don't have to have it.
Oh, that's interesting. If you need a change in venue, there's the fancy yogurt company Siggy's. I don't actually know if that's how you pronounce it. I've eaten it, and I call it Siggy's in my head. It's S-I-G-G-I apostrophe S. They will pay a person $50,000. All you have to do is move to Iceland, which is one of the world's happiest countries, and share the experience with its 4-day work week. Apparently, they're loving it there. And then you just have to talk about it on social media. Fred. Iceland, yes, no.
Oh, I'm all for Iceland.
Me too.
Yeah.
All you guys have to do is post. You have to document your experiences. You got to try the food, immerse yourself in the culture. And to apply for this role, you need a valid passport, some strong writing skills, a passion for photography. But I don't know that, Fred, your palate will allow you.
Yeah, you got to
be really
lobster.
Yeah, see. You've got to be more food adventurous. Fred
That's
is
true.
Not strong in food adventure. Mark could go. And finally, in Sue's News, we have today's random fact. Yuma, Arizona is known as the sunniest place on Earth. It gets more than 4,000 sunlight years hours per year. Now, this is more than any other city in the world. I mean, yes. Because even if the sun is up in Alaska when the sun shines, it could be cloudy. This is straight up sunshine.
Why?
I don't know. Because it's Arizona? Sue's News did not go into the why, Fred.
You could do
that on
tomorrow.
Fred's
yeah,
News.
That's right.
Right.
Yes.
The why costs extra, Fred. You should know that by now. 422.
Right.
State Senator Holly Radar is coming up. She's written a book that's getting a lot of attention called Cinder Girl, Growing Up on America's Fringe. We'll also get an update on what's happening with the big tax cut in Jeff City. It's all coming up here next on 97.1 FM Talk. Phoenix, they're in town tonight.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Oh, I'm very much looking forward to tomorrow's show, not only because we have a Reardon Roundtable, State Rep Steve Butts and Nick Shore will be here. Also, former State Senator Jeff Smith, Uncle Ted's going to be here in the 5 o'clock hour. My good friend Ted Nugent, haven't had him on the show in a while. I've known him for 3+ decades. He's awesome. He's a big teddy bear, and he will join us tomorrow night. Speaking of Senator Smith, he sent me, apparently he's getting a little money on the side here to promote a book. Let's see if Holly's listening. She's going to laugh. Holly Radar is with us. She is a state senator who knows Jeff Smith, and Jeff brought this to my attention. Holly, you've written a book called Cinder Girl, Growing Up on America's Fringe. Thank you so much for coming on 97.1 FM Talk. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
You are a state senator from what part of Missouri?
So I'm Southeast Missouri.
Well, I was just testing there. Southeast where? Give us a little detail. But that's what the book's about also, right?
A lot of it is. You know, I'm from Saxton. I live in Scott City now, which is just south of Cape Girardeau. And my district is 6 counties in Southeast Missouri. But I moved over 30 times from the end of my third grade to the beginning of my 10th grade. So I've lived, you know, from California to Florida.
I said earlier in the afternoon, Holly, and my apologies, I haven't read the book. I just got it. I love the cover, by the way. So the cover is a picture of you when you're how old?
I was 16 there with my baby on my hip.
Yep.
Standing in the middle of the trailer park.
You picked a great picture for the cover of Cinder Girl. But when I was talking about it and kind of describing it, you read the back cover. It says, growing up on welfare, food stamps, and Greyhound buses, Holly Thompson Radar quit school at 15 to help take care of her mother and younger sister. And then it goes into all these things. I think it would be the last thing someone would think if they picked this up at a bookstore is, hey, this is a Republican who's writing this book, right?
Right. That's right.
So,
yeah. And
well, let's explore how that happened, because obviously the book goes into all kinds of details of some really, in some cases, horrifying things that happened to you. But I guess let me kind of start with, how does that result in you being a conservative Republican, which I'm very happy with? But, you know, it's odd, I think you would admit,
yeah,
that people would think it's odd.
It is odd. And, you know, and that's a lot of what I talk about in my book, is just really showing a face to mental illness. Really, you know, that I grew up with a mother that struggled with mental illness her whole life, drug addiction, sexual abuse and violence, domestic violence. And I put my head down and worked and trusted God, but I wanted a different life for my daughter when I had her. I was then a high school dropout at 15. I was married and pregnant and right on the path that my first education had taught me. And so I wanted different for my daughter, but as I grew up and as I worked and just put my head down and stayed the course, what I found is that many of the policies that I had grown up with literally held back, kept the women in my family from ever rising to their potential. And so certainly being a legislator now, it is, you know, something that I've been very passionate about and trying to help change the trajectory, help stop the poverty cycle, and really just bring people up. It should be a hand up. And certainly after I had my daughter, I had to be on welfare a couple of times for short periods of time, and it was a hand up. But that's what it's a safety net. That's what it should be. And we need to be working more towards that.
And we're probably, Holly, farther away from that than we were when, you know, you were in that situation, just because of where the politics has gone in this country. But let's talk about a few more things in Cinder Girl, because it's a story that does involve a lot of poverty, but also mental health. And I want you to talk about that just a little bit. You know, I've been somebody who has been more open about some struggles that I've had with anxiety and depression. Finally, you know, being courageous enough to kind of talk about that publicly. And I think it's necessary. I think it's important. But you talk about your mother and just realizing that she just wasn't right sometimes in the head, right?
Right. And, you know, and it is something. Mental health is the same as physical health. I mean, and it has to come out of the shadows. And it's so awesome that you do that from such a public platform. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do, is normalize it, because it is normal. It
yeah.
absolutely is normal. And the problems that we see are because we're not getting our mental health treated. And so if we normalize it by talking about it and the same with addiction, you know, I talk about that, and my book really isn't political. It's more based and focused around just showing some true life examples. And I mean, I've had so many people tell me they're crying one minute and laughing the next when reading it, because I'm just raw and honest. And, but I think that's what people need to see, so that maybe to give them the courage to start speaking up and not being afraid to say, hey, yeah, I mean, I have depression at times. And, you know, I mean, that's just something that we go through, but we have to be, we have to feel that we can remove that stigma and reach out for help.
Cinder Girl is the name of the book. State Senator Holly Redder is my guest this afternoon. Growing up on America's fringe, would you say, I'm curious about your opinions of just where we are with politics these days, and you know how extreme it has gotten from the standpoint. I think philosophically, you're someone that believes that, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, that government can't solve all problems, right? That there have to be other resources. Government can help, maybe direct resources, but they're not going to fix the opioid crisis, right? They're not going to fix poverty. They're not going to do these things to education. Some of this has to come from within, right? It's not always going to be policies from government or a state legislature that are going to fix these things. Is that an accurate read?
Right. We need policy. We have to remove the policies that are actually holding people back. And look, I mean, I get it that these policies come from very compassionate places from both sides of the aisle. But if you haven't really seen it in practice, you just don't know what you don't know. And so, you know, my mother was highly intelligent, and it was easier for her to be on the system than it was to be out working and struggling and doing those things. And plus, we moved all the time. And so, but we do have some policies now that we've really done some great work in the past few years. When we moved receiving TANF, which is what I call welfare, because that's what I grew up on. It's now called TANF. But when I was on welfare, you know, you could stay on the system. You have another kid and you get more money. Well, now with the program, you can only be in there for 3 years. And so, but now the caveat to that is there are benchmarks that you have to meet during that 3 years. So it's getting into volunteering somewhere. And we all know volunteering opens doors to jobs. Getting into volunteering somewhere or getting into a technical program or some form of education, because that is what's important. That's what makes upward mobility for families is not how many people we've dropped off the system after 3 years, but how many people are actually self-sufficient, how many have hit those benchmarks. And, you know, that's not going to then end up needing government assistance in other areas because we've just dropped them and still they haven't moved forward in any way.
Yeah. Well, and these are ideas, I think, you know, if you go back a couple of decades, there were Democrats like Bill Clinton and maybe even Hillary Clinton at the time that believed in benchmarks like that. Clinton was responsible
Absolutely.
For some welfare reform. But it does seem, Holly, like we're further away from those types of moments on the other side of the aisle than we ever have been in history, because it seems, and, you know, I can sound like an old dude here complaining about the younger generation because I have younger generation kids who are communists.
I do too, right?
But
I don't think it's communist, though.
Well, I might be slightly exaggerating, although I'm not exactly sure at this point. We still love them. Everything's great. I'm just joking around a little bit. But I also see so many people who I know who are employers, business people, who talk about the difficulties of a younger generation that simply seems, and this is a blanket statement, I get there's a lot of great kids that are working hard out there, and I get that. But there is this unwillingness to really maybe make sacrifice and work, and that concerns me.
It's way concerning, and I've been an employer for many years, and I mean, it's a problem. It's a problem.
What's the solution, or your solution, or ideas when it comes to opioids and fentanyl and all of this stuff that's overwhelming, that's being, you know, felt in families all across Missouri in this country, not just in urban areas, but devastating deaths and consequences?
You know, there's certainly no silver bullet, and I know you get that, but there are some things, and normalizing addiction and a substance use disorder, which is the medical term for it. And, you know, some of our DNA is just prone to that. And so we have to start looking at it from a medical perspective and making sure that, again, we normalize it so that folks go see their doctor. They tell their doctor everything, and then their doctor can help get them on a path to pulling back from the narcotics to get them off of that. Now, so many people treat, and I talk about this in my book, you know, my sister was brutally raped before she was 16. She had been raped multiple times, but she was brutally raped before she was 16. She was an addict by the time she was 16. She married her 39-year-old drug dealer at 16. And, but she was self-medicating. You know, she found that her demons went away when she was taking drugs. And from the sexual abuse. And so those are the things that, I mean, we have to be pro people getting the help that they need for mental illness, for substance use disorder / addiction.
All those things. Did you see, by any chance, did you see the 60 Minutes piece from, I guess it would have been late last spring, on mental illness, by any chance?
I didn't.
Well, they talked about, here's where I thought they were onto something here, because, and I've related to this just because when I was going through some things, you know, 9, 10 years ago, whenever it was hard to find an appointment with someone. You know, you're at a crisis, right? You want to see someone and you can't get an appointment for 3 months. And I think it's even worse than that
right
now. So in Milwaukee, what they did, there was sort of a trial experiment. And I guess I'm not a big believer in just throwing money at problems when, you know, it's just going to be wasted money. But in this case, I would think
Me
that there
either.
Potentially would be resources. What they did is they set up a walk-in clinic, essentially, for people who have mental illness. And I don't know what level of success they had, but it just seems to me we need more creative solutions and things that people can really take advantage of, because it's not going to do you any good if you come forward, you say, I think I'm struggling with this or I need help, if you can't get the help. And it seems like that's where, you know, it's twofold. You got people that have a stigma. They're afraid to even admit that they might have some struggles in that area. And then even if you do, you can't find help. You can't find immediate help.
That's exactly right. And I tell you a little story that's funny, but not funny. A few weeks ago, so, you know, I'm thinking, hey, I need to take some of my own advice and I need to get an appointment to see a therapist. And so I go online to do this and I get an appointment online and it's a week out. And I'm like, that's okay. You know, and I just went through a divorce after 30 years and I'm thinking I need to do this. And I get online for my appointment and they were having technical difficulties and they said, well, we'll, you know, call you back tomorrow and we'll get you hooked up. They didn't call back. So a few days later, I got back online. I set that appointment again. It was a week out and We get to 2 hours before the appointment. I get an email saying that the appointment's been canceled. Oh. I need.
Yeah.
And I'm like, seriously, this is so much of our problem.
And that, by the way, what you're describing is probably a good situation. You know, that might be on the better side.
That's a good situation.
Yeah.
I have insurance.
Yes, yes.
You know, and when my daughter was struggling with addiction, 13 years in deep addiction, my grandson being born with opioids in the system and me taking custody of him, I mean, getting her in and out, we went into these 30-day rehabilitation programs over and over. And it wasn't until I was educated enough and able to get her into a long-term program that had the mental health component that she needed with it, that she was able to successfully beat it. And she's 8 years clean now and the best mama I know, but it was a struggle. And that's exactly what you're talking about. We have got to have resources, and a walk-in clinic for an immediate need is that's exactly the type of solutions that we need.
Cinder Girl is the name of the brand new book. Holly Thompson Rader is the author. She's a state senator from down in the Sykeson area, Growing Up on America's Fringe, a memoir. You know, if you weren't a Republican, I'd think that Hollywood would come calling for a story like this. That still should happen, but there's some great things in there. Holly, thank you so much. I'll make sure I give Senator Smith a bit of a, you know, bonus tomorrow on the roundtable for helping you sell books. How does that sound?
Good. All right. Thank you.
Come see us in person. Thank you, Holly.
I will. Thank you.
Well, this is one of those stories that kind of took off on social media today about Stacey Abrams. I'm still so confused as to how Stacey Abrams became this huge national political figure that most people really don't know anything about, but her name gets mentioned so much, you'd think that she's got the street cred of Hillary Clinton or something like that. What I mean by that, just the notoriety or the popularity. But Sue, I don't know if you heard about her comment that has gone viral. No, she did this. I can't remember when this took place, but it's an event at the Ray Charles Performing Arts Center in Atlanta. And she says this. This is now, the audio's out there.
There is no such thing as a heartbeat in 6 weeks. It is a manufactured sound designed to convince people that men have the right to take control of a woman's body away from her.
Could you hear what she said there? She said
no heartbeat at 6 weeks. I believe that's untrue.
There is no such thing as a heartbeat at 6 weeks. She said it is a manufactured sound designed to convince people that men have the right to take control of a woman's body. Of course, up until a few weeks ago, what's interesting is Planned Parenthood had information on their website that indicated that, yes, in fact, you could detect a fetal heartbeat at 5 to 6 weeks. Here's Will Cain on Fox earlier today.
This is QAnon plus level of conspiracy. She says that ultrasound machines were a conspiracy made up by men to control women's bodies, that ultrasound machines that can hear a fetal heartbeat at 6 weeks are simply a conspiracy. She says it's not true. You can't hear a heartbeat, and the machine is lying to you because the machine has been designed by men in order to control women's bodies. I want to be clear. The machine and medicine are, in Stacey Abrams' estimation, conspiracies against women. And this is someone that you're supposed to take seriously in a gubernatorial race for Georgia, or I don't know, hasn't she been on the cover of Time magazine and been put forward as a potential presidential candidate at one point? This is who, by the way, is one of the biggest election deniers in American history of the last couple of years. This is the pot calling the kettle black. This is the conspiracy theorist calling others conspiracy theorists.
Here's the thing that's important about this is that you're going to hear this story here on 97.1. If you go to Fox, you're going to hear about it. If you go to the Fox website, you're going to hear about it. If this was something that Brian Kemp said, or if it was something that Herschel Walker said, who, of course, is running for the United States Senate, if it was a dumb, backwards-ass Republican that said something as ridiculously non-scientific as that. And let's be honest, Will Cain's right. She's not denying the science only. She has a conspiracy theory. She thinks it's some grand plan to deny women the ability to suck the babies out of their womb, which is just frightening. So she'd get hammered. They would lampoon her on Saturday Night Live. They would lampoon her on CNN. endlessly. You'd hear it. It would be on the evening news.
Yep.
Now, the evening news is about to start in the next hour. My guess is that this is not going to be anywhere to be seen. Sometimes I'm wrong about this. Every once in a while, the mainstream media does surprise me. But my guess, especially because you have to keep with the narrative here in Georgia, and the narrative is we want Raphael Warnock and Stacey Abrams to win because we don't want dumb Republicans to go to the United States Senate or the governor's mansion. It's unbelievable, really, when you think about it. But I think about it always twofold, because not only the idiotic comment that was said and gets spread around, but the complete omission on the part of most of the mainstream media to even touch that issue. It's really, you know, a lot of the media bias, and I've explained this over the decades, really, is not the things that they say they're telling you, it's the things that they're not telling you. We'll take a break here at the top of the hour. When we return, ladies and gentlemen, Jazz Shaw will be here. We highlighted this yesterday. You know, Jazz is a big Space Force guy because he loves the UFOs and everything, but this is a real thing. It sounded like we were making fun of it, and it wasn't real, but in fact, it is. The new Space Force song was unveiled yesterday, and Jazz has got a hot take on that. We'll also talk about Fauci. He's in the news again today, and there's a Seattle area school that is trying to ban saying biological male. Some of this stuff, it goes on. It just continues and continues and continues. He also wrote a real interesting story. I don't know. People might have mixed opinions of this. So the NTSB, which is the National Transportation and Safety Board, they want to make sure that all new cars aren't only electric. We have to have that. But they can sniff out alcohol. So if there's alcohol involved with the driver, not going to let you drive.
Interesting.
We'll talk about that in the next hour. Also, Glenn McCoy, cartoonist, animator, the Post-Dispatch reducing a lot of its comics. Glenn's going to weigh in on that, plus an audio cut of the day and more.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.